Hello, everyone. Richard Lewis here. It's another episode of The Richard Lewis Show, and we're doing something a little bit different as part of our partnership with Rivalry.gg. Remember, you can go to Rivalry.gg/RLS and qualify for up to $350 of VIP bonuses. But we've brought on Renessa from Rivalry, who handles content and whatnot over there. And today, she's going to be kind of interviewing me on my own show, so I don't know how that's going to work. But we'll see. I guess I'm the guest here. And yeah, we're going to talk a little bit about Dota 2, kind of running events, running tournaments, kind of just talking about a little bit more what I kind of do in my day job as outside of the YouTube channel and whatever else comes up. So thanks very much, Renessa, for taking the time and making my life easy, because I'm told that you've done a bunch of research. So I'm looking forward to seeing how this goes. Yeah, so welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for letting me interview you on your own show. It'll be a little different, but at least it's that should first. Keep things interesting. Yeah, well, oh, cool. Nice. Well, see, now I feel special. Now my job is to make you feel special.
Well, let's see if you've got the right questions. Remember, they all must make me look good, or we just edit them out in post. If there's anything
that makes me look bad. I don't have control over the editing.
Yeah, no, absolutely not. I might even chop up some of the answers if I get them wrong. So let's see how you've done.
So take everything with a grain of salt, basically, absolutely. For those who are watching, which, fake you know, that's going to get cut out. Exactly.
That's how we do. Fake news.
So we're going to launch into it. We just have to do the straight up, expected, obvious, I'm a Dota person. You are not exactly known for Dota. But you hosted this decently sized Dota event. And, you know, you and the community, not that close. Nope. So I really just first expected question. What was your reaction when you got asked to host Dota? Just what did you think right off the bat?
So, I mean, first of all, it was kind of me driving internally. Like, I wanted, there's like, when I first took this job with ESP Gaming, there was a bunch of games that I wanted to do for sure. And, you know, I think if I had my like top five, Dota would probably have been second. And we got to do PUBG, which I was super excited about as well. That was on the list. So two down, three more of my particular choices of games to go. I'm sure people will be able to figure out at least one of those titles. But yeah, so I was driving it, and there's lots of reasons for it. First of all, I play the game. It's pretty much the only multiplayer game I play now.
You said I was watching your Face It stream with Thorin, and you either said you had 1,000 games or 1,000 MMR. Which is a clear difference.
Yeah, very, very much so. So what I did was, I got involved in Dota 2, like playing it when it first came out. And I did what a lot of people do in MOBAs, that you play the game, you tank your MMR, and you end up in a trench, and it's real hard to climb out. So, I mean, I've been climbing slowly. I'm certainly not in that 1K bracket anymore, but, you know, on my main. But what I did was, I was fortunate enough to actually meet some higher level or higher level Dota players. And one of them, a guy called OG Feed, he actually started coaching me. So then I got a new account, built it up. You know, there's like 400, 500 hours on that. Managed to climb with a much more decent level. Nothing amazing, but I didn't feel that bad when I was talking to some of the casters and stuff at the event. Like, a lot of the casters were like, oh, you know, I'm at like 4K MMR. And I thought, oh, well, that's actually not that bad. I'm not a million miles away from you. I felt good about that. But certainly overall, I think about 2,000 hours now in Dota 2, which I know isn't amazing. I mean, like, I was looking at like Capitalist Steam account, and it was like, you know, 10,000 hours, and apparently he's not even the highest in terms of.
Oh, he's not even. When it comes to the pros, they were at 10,000 hours 3 or 4 years ago. They're easily like the 20s, and then they have all their alt accounts.
Yeah. So it's a lot of time. Yeah. I mean, it's look, I'm obviously an older guy. I'm always busy. I'm always working. So when I do get some time to play, generally I'll just play off stream, and I'll play like a few games of Dota 2. That's pretty much my jam right now. So back to the original question. It was like one of the reasons I wanted to do it was, first of all, I really, really like the game. Second of all, Valve are really, really good about tournament organizers coming in and running a tournament. A lot of developers these days, it's like you have to go and kiss the ring And oh, yes, developers, oh, mighty developer, please, may we have permission to run a tournament for you? And they're like, we shall consider it, peasant. And it's just like, it's a really yeah, right? Well, I mean, the Overwatch situation's even crazier because, you know, Blizzard actually wants creative control if you're an independent TO. Which is insane to me, but Valve have always been like, obviously had a long working relationship with Valve, and basically all they do is they come in, they do a little bit of due diligence to make sure you're not some cowboy outfit, and you know, they'll when it comes to the majors and the minors, and in the international, which they do themselves, obviously when they partner up with a production company or a TO for that kind of event. Yes, they definitely are taking close notice, and you sort of have to bid for it, if you like. But running a regular tournament, Valve are just like, have at it, do your thing, we're not going to interfere. So that was another big reason why I wanted to do it, because Valve get it. They understand that every successful esport ever pretty much has had this organic, you know, you build up from the bottom, and you have a very clear tiered pyramid. So that was another reason. Obviously, a lot of talent as well. Now, I've said some... I mean, like, oh, my history with saying stupid shit about Dota is pretty well documented. I think I went on a podcast, like, many, many years ago with DJ Wheat when he used to do Live on 3. And on that podcast, it was a Dota 2 circle jerk. I don't like elitism in any community, and the Dota 2 community back then were basically insufferable. You know, it was like...
Just back then?
Well, I don't mind them so much now. I think over time, they've mellowed a little bit. But back then, because StarCraft 2 was getting a lot of shine, it was like, StarCraft 2 players simply could not comprehend the deep mechanics of Dota. And it was just like, you just had to believe that Dota 2 was like... It was like chess, you know? It was like some fucking ultra-deep, cerebral game that only geniuses could play. And if you didn't say that, then you were an idiot. So naturally, I took the bait. And whenever I was sort of challenged to say only positive things about Dota 2, I did kind of relish a little bit in saying the negative. So I went on this podcast, and it was like Slasher was there, and Marcus were there, and they were like, you know, singing Dota 2's praises. And I was kind of like, you know, sticking up for League of Legends, if you can believe that, given my relationship with Riot Games down the years, and just saying, like, you know, I look, it tests two different sets of mechanics. To call one mechanically more difficult than the other is a little bit disingenuous. I think Dota 2 cosmetics are overpriced, I think was something I said, which of course is entirely subjective. I was trying to argue positively on behalf of unlocking things, which was, in retrospect, was completely stupid. So basically what I did was I tried to be a contrarian about Dota 2, and I spectacularly failed because I was incredibly ignorant. So that was the first thing that
set me down the path. Alienating, basically.
It didn't take much to get alienated from that community anyway. Then after that, obviously, the Loader incident kind of puts a nail in that coffin. I've said it many times now. The truth doesn't seem to matter to people. Massively overblown, massively overplayed. Nobody was choked. Sam was even there. So nobody cares what Sam saw, because Sam was there with me when it happened. Nobody was choked. Nobody was punched. Nobody was attacked. Nobody was assaulted. It was just two guys having an altercation, a verbal altercation, over a misunderstanding. Somebody got a little bit too close to somebody else. That person then pushed them away. It was over in 3 seconds. And even Loaders sort of subsequently said he wished he'd never tweeted about it. You know, we've hugged it out. And he's been to a WSOE event when he came with his PUBG team. We didn't hang out or anything, but we said hello. There are no problems there. But I think because of the lies that got published about it, it does make it incredibly difficult to then sort of go over to the community and be like, hi, I'm that guy that allegedly assaulted a player or whatever. So
not only a player, a TI winner.
Yeah, of course, right?
Important distinction for everybody.
Yes, yes. So, you know, that's all a bit silly. But again, I can understand the community stance on it. But apart from all of that, you know, I have a lot of friends among the talent pool. Oh, and that was the other thing. I did say that the Dota 2 talent were the most insecure talent of any esport, because when TI
three
starts,
years ago or now?
I'd still say it's true now, honestly, even though I'm friends with a lot of them. It's just whenever TI comes rolling around, you can see they don't want to annoy the community. They don't want to express their opinions because they definitely want to be at TI. And they, for some reason, they think if they act normal and talk normally about the Dota 2 community or criticize a perception or say something, they think they won't be there. And I would say if anybody believes that that's the case, Nahaz was there. He was used brilliantly at the last TI, exactly what I would want from Nahaz. And Nahaz is a guy who I think we can all admit, you know, his Twitter is super annoying, and that's coming from me. So
I mean, PPD straight up told him to delete Twitter or take it away, which honestly is not a bad idea for several people to just have their Twitter taken away sometimes.
Yeah, and it's like it's the flip-flopping. Yeah, it's the flip-flopping, I think, that annoy people about Nahaz. It's like, if you want to get involved in the drama and have an opinion about it, that's absolutely your right as an educated person about the scene, a very smart, intelligent individual. But then when you tweet something out and then either delete it or recant it almost immediately because you're worried about backlash, that's where it becomes harder for somebody like me to go, you know, oh, come on, like, have some self-respect, you know? And I think a lot of the Dota 2 community are kind of like, well, the casters are super worried because, and the other thing that always happens, TI, there's always one guy who puts a tweet out going, you know, one caster who always goes, disappointed to not be invited to TI, really think, like, just suck it up, Buttercup, there'll be other events, you know?
Do you know why? So this is, I know exactly where all of this comes from.
Why is that?
Several years ago, Coddle Guy did not get an invite to TI, maybe TI 5, I think. And I do not think this was insecurity. I do not think this was manipulations on any of his part. He was just letting his fans know, hey guys, I won't be at TI. I've had a great year with Dota. I'll keep going. I'll see you at the next event. I won't be at TI. I thought it was professional the way he did it. And Riot just ensued across everywhere. And Reddit just lost their minds. And it was every single front page thread. And then, like, a day later, Valve said, hey, Coddle Guy's invited. And so now every single talent is probably thinking, oh, hey, maybe I'll get a Reddit outrage and I'll get invited. And so they have to stay on the good side of the community. They have to stay on the good side of Valve. And they have to just hope that people will go to bat for them if they don't end up in the TI talent list.
Yeah, I mean, in other esports, there's kind of a precedent for that. Like, I don't know how much you follow League of Legends. I know it's sacrilege when we're supposed to be talking about Dota, but D-Man did this, and D-Man got his job with Riot Games. Obviously, you know, he was part of the duo, you know, D-Man and Joe Miller, and hugely popular, you know, considered the voice of League. And what he did was he got to a point where it was like Riot Games were going to make some hires, or were they? And he put, like, very famously put a tweet out going, oh, I'm going to have to bloody quit it if Riot don't hire me. I'll just have to stop commentating because there's just no money in it. And I love it. And I love the community. And I love all of you guys. And it was like this really, like, sort of pandering tweet simultaneously saying, but I'm going to have to quit. Front page Reddit post, like, people spamming Riot. If you don't hire him, we'll never touch your game again. And once you get into that position, what are you going to do? It's like, you know, pick somebody up who's a contractor on a permanent basis, get a load of free publicity and secure the services of the commentator in your game. It was a no-brainer. So that's what they did. But yeah, I've seen a lot of esports people kind of cynically manipulate communities to get what they want. It used to happen all the time in StarCraft as well. I mean, that was why I sort of became liked by the StarCraft community but hated by a lot of the StarCraft talent, because I was like, you do know all these people are just using you for money, right? Like, have you noticed this? They promise you shit and then 2 years later we're still waiting for documentaries that never come out and stretch goals that never get performed. So I started writing articles about it, and it seemed to chime with the StarCraft community at that time. Now, I've always wanted to do something similar for Dota, because I think where there's money, there's usually corruption. But it's been very hard trying to change perceptions about me and who I am. And again, I understand it and respect it. Said and done a lot. Sorry, my voice is blowing out here. said and done a lot of dumb shit down the years. But yeah, I mean, ultimately, I like the game. I'd like to be part of the community. I think I've mended fences with everyone that I have to mend fences with. And hopefully WSOE is kind of a step towards reparations, if you want, with the Dota 2 community. Because I thought it was a good event. I thought it was run well. I thought we, you know, had some great moments there. And yeah, we want to do more in the Dota space for sure.
Yeah, well, the Lotus thing, I mean, it still comes up. That's one of the things you felt compelled to talk about. But the thing is there's so much other drama and kind of awful things that have happened that people just gloss over because talent have become their favorites because you see them on screen all the time. Mm-hmm. And so I think the disadvantage for you is that it is an incident happened 3 years ago and then no one in Dota has seen you at all. But this one event where you worked seamlessly with some of the community's favorites, I mean, they love Lyrical, right? And Moxie is definitely becoming really popular. She's doing great on Dream League, like literally right now casting. And that gelled really well. And so that's honestly, in the end, that's probably more what people will start to remember. But because you kind of had that one instant 3 years ago and then really nothing, that's all anybody chooses to remember or talk about.
Yeah, it was good to kind of get to meet these people. I mean, like, so on the last night when we were all partying, well, I say partying, I mean, the Dota talent are not as rock and roll as the Counter-Strike talent, I'll tell you that for free.
I noticed at ESL 1 New York, I went out with the whole Counter-Strike group, and it was really different from going out with the Dota group.
Yeah, we do the throwing the TVs out of hotel room windows. Certainly compared to the Dota 2 community. I was breaking their chops, busting their chops a little bit about it with them. You know, they've taken pictures of each other saying having a great night, and they're like playing Risk or whatever. You know, but anyway, we went out on the last night, and we were all there. You know, I took all the talent out. We were just talking about it, and they were all like, you know, listen, we didn't know what to expect. We all thought you would be a fucking asshole. Because the only thing we see of you is the 280 characters now. I can be double the asshole. You know, the 280 characters you put out on Twitter, right? So it's like, you know, I'm talking to those guys and I'm like, listen, I just want to be able to articulate my thoughts on a matter whenever I have those thoughts. Twitter's the perfect medium for that. But it's like, if we were all judged, like when we're all getting fucking what's it called when you go up to heaven at the end of end times when you get
judgment
the
day. Literally
yeah when day. Yeah when judgment day comes around if God's looking at the content of my Twitter feed and that's going to dictate whether I go to fucking heaven or hell or whatever, then we're all fucked, I think, you know. So it's really strange that people are very quick to judge based on Twitter, but you know, if it's all you know about somebody, I suppose it's reasonable. But I had a great time hanging out with those guys, and you're absolutely right. I mean, Lyrical was a god tier talent. I think you did great work on the desk. I don't need to sing Capitalist's praises. I think everyone knows he's one of the best all round talents in the whole of esports, not just Dota 2. And obviously, I got to tick a couple of things off my bucket list because I used to watch and play Heroes of New Earth. So I got to work with Breaky CPK, who was the voice of that game, and one of the first, I would say, hugely influential MOBA caster in terms of how he could do team fights. Like, if you go back and watch some of the early Heroes and Ueth commentary, nobody had heard anything like that in esports before. So it was great to work with him. And obviously Moxie, you know, every time I run an event, I wanna give somebody a breakout opportunity. I wanna throw the Hail Mary pass, and you know, I trust my own judgment on talent, so I know the Hail Mary pass is gonna land in the end zone. I've done it before. I did it at E-League when I put Mo, the CS guy, on television. Everybody said I was crazy. Even the presidents were resisting that one, like network presidents, and I was like, this is the guy. You gotta trust me on this, and he did a great job and was much missed, I would say, by everybody at the show. For the PUBG thing, again, I had pushback internally because I wanted to use Mustache Dave. People were going, who the fuck's Mustache Dave? He looks like some fucking Dr. Disrespect knockoff. He's got 400 views on his YouTube videos. Richard, you're crazy. I'm like, this guy is going to be a huge interviewer. Well, he knocked it out of the park, and he's been he was too busy for me to rehire.
So it's your own fault. You lost.
Yeah. And then obviously Moxie, right? Who's somebody I've watched, you know, doing all these late night Dota games where she's commentating. I think she's great. She does things a little bit differently. So yeah, it was like, it was a no-brainer to bring her in as well. And, you know, I got a little bit of criticism for some of the pairings. And again, this is me probably trying to be a bit too radical, because what I hate in commentary in general is the idea of like delineated roles. I'm play-by-play, I'm color. And Dota seems very set in its ways with that. I want to move away from that. I think what we need is storytelling, which is what we did in StarCraft with Tastosis. It's what we started doing in Counter-Strike with Anders and Semler, and now taken to that next level with, like, you know, Sadakist and Henry G and guys like that. And I'd love to see that in Dota. So I wasn't thinking about, you know, two play-by-plays going together. I wanted to see what stories they could tell together in the game. And I think it worked, you know, it worked well. Eventually, in some areas. And yeah, it clicked. It just took a couple,
The first day, it was definitely a little rough.
Sure.
With them just getting used to each other, because it's just new pairings for them. But then, you know, towards the end, there was much more chemistry. And I think even if you'd done a play-by-play and an analyst, if they haven't done a lot of casting together, you still would see that rockiness on day one a lot of times.
Yeah. So you know, I think all in all, I made a good impression on the talent. I mean, it was great working with them. They were all like super cool people to work with. I'm already in talks with Zayori. I want to get involved in something he's working on. Maybe, you know, we're going to talk about his Midas Mode tournament, which I think is an
awesome event.
Yeah. And, and, you know, I keep in touch with a lot of guys, you know, like obviously I've known Toby for years. I've known, you know, Capitalist a long time. Me and Sir Action Slack started out, you know, I think I said something disparaging about him on Twitter.
That's how pretty much every one of Slack's relationships starts out.
But like, we're good friends now, and I got a lot of, like, to be honest, when I said negative shit about Sir Action Slack, I hadn't really looked at his output. I just thought he was some like giant rubber faced goony interviewer, and of course that's like not, I mean, he is that, but that's not
that's an accurate description.
But then when John passed away, I went back and I looked through when Total Biscuit passed away, I went back and I was like looking through you know, like tweets and stuff. And obviously, like, that was what I was like kind of catching up on who Sir Action Slacks was and why John really liked his work. And saw, like, you know, all of the cosplay shit he'd done. And then I went away and I watched like 200 episodes of Fails of the Week. And then, you know, it was just like, oh, like, this guy is really fucking spontaneously funny and really good. And yeah, you can see, understand why he's an asset. I mean, he just did that DHL advert for the interdimensional courier. So he fucking killed it, you know? So I think I had to challenge a lot of my preconceptions. I had a lot of negative ideas about Dota 2 talent, which in actuality, you know, were probably a bit silly to have formed. And I'm really glad that we all kind of mended fences and we all kind of get along right now. You know, we all talk privately, you know, whether or not I'm welcomed into the community, whatever that means, I'd still consider these guys my friends, you know?
Well, I have some talent testimonials, actually. I went and talked to them before doing this. I said, hey, guys, listen, I need your honest feedback. I'm going to interview Richard Lewis. I can leave you anonymous if you want. And they were all like, no, you can tell him I said it.
Okay, get ready on the timestamp button, Sam. Get ready. This is going out. All right.
Okay, so first I spoke to Moxie. So I was really excited for her to be out of LAN and everything. So I wanted to check in and see how it was going. And now she said, I'm going to ruin his street cred by calling him a total darling. That's... He's very passionate about what he does, and he really wants to try to breathe some new ideas into the Dota scene. He also demands the best, was in all caps, the best from everyone involved, which I admire. So that's actually something that I have really not heard from talent very often. They, when I'm sitting in green rooms with them, when I'm talking to them, you know, they talk about how an event is doing something cool, maybe, or they're enjoying casting, or the day's really long. But I've never really heard someone say they demand the best or they push me to be better. And so I want to know, where do they get that from you? Like, what is happening behind the scenes and how do you push people?
So generally, it's just like little things. Like when, so first of all, with the talent pool, whenever I'm looking, I'll do my due diligence as well. I'm not big on divas. I've never had a diva complex myself. And I don't like people who come into green rooms and have a little bit of an air about them, because it's the kind of thing that can have a knock-on effect, you know. But I'm equally as passionate about like good working conditions for talent. I don't want to push people too hard. I don't want us to have long days. You know, we did on the first day, which was a little bit disappointed. We had a few tech issues, and we ended up doing like an 11, 12 hour day when I think we didn't want it to go past 10, I think was the original plan. And, you know, these things have a knock-on effect. You know, you're already jet lagged. You work a long day. You only get 6 hours sleep. You come into the last day, which is meant to be the hype day, and there's no energy left. So I it's that little bit of attention to detail. Like, how can we look after the guys? How can we make sure if we do hit those delays, they're being looked after? You know, do we have relief talent? Can we send people home early? Can we have people come in later for call times? So I'm always looking at like ways to basically buy sleep and food and, you know, all the stuff you need for energy on the broadcast. And then the other thing just is in general, I don't want talent to have rock star attitudes, but I want to treat them like rock stars. I want all the people involved on a production level to basically understand that, you know, these guys are the face and the voice of our product. I want them looked after. Good hotels, good hotel rooms, food, runners, people looking after them. You know, if they've got a complaint, I want them to feel comfortable just bringing it up. You know, I want them involved in the broadcast because maybe they've got some great ideas. One thing I learned from doing TV for 2 years, and this doesn't happen in esports, we don't have production meetings in esports. And for those that don't know, a production meeting is literally about 2 hours, maybe sometimes 4 hours before you go live. You bring in the director, the producer, all of the talent, the people making the graphics, everybody part of the team, and you sit down and you say, what are today's stories? What did you like about yesterday's broadcast? You know, and then people start firing off ideas. And the talent generally know the game better than anyone else, so that they might have these little like nuggets, you know, these little gems. And then a producer can go, oh, great. Well, you know, this guy was really stressed yesterday and had some bad games. So let's keep a camera on him. Let's get his graphics made so we can show that, you know, day one he had poor statistics. And a lot of what you build into a broadcast starts in the production meeting. The amount of esports events I've done, and obviously I've done esports events for a long, long time, where literally I couldn't believe it. I was like, we don't have talent. We've never done a production meeting. And like everybody in TV is going, well, this is like the norm. You do this for every show, you know, all of the time. Like, and so that was something that I wanted to do. And then just in terms of, around the broadcast, you know, it's just little things. It's just little things. Like we had a few problems on day one, tech issues where we had like, you know, only one monitor, right? So while we're watching the draft, when our jib cam was coming in, it was blocking part of the monitor. And I was like, right, well, fuck it. We got to move that monitor. And then people are like, well, you know, I don't, no, I'll do it then. You know, I'll get involved on all levels. Like, you know, I want to be, I want everything to be perfect, but without like chewing people up about it. You know, I'm not that kind of guy. I'll never shout, but it's just like, look, this is what we need. So how do we get there?
I remember that. There was something on the panel where you were like, oh, I can't see like that. Yeah. You know, the other side of the panel has to tell me what the ban is. I can't see what it is.
Yeah.
And that's it ended up being like this funny banter thing that actually I thought like added some character to the show even more. So it wasn't necessarily a bad thing.
And that's another thing. Like if it is going to shit again, 2 years on live television, what they always used to tell me was, just acknowledge the fuck up. Like, don't lie to the audience. They know something's not quite right. Don't try and style it out. Just have some fun. Just laugh it off. You know, you don't need to throw production under the bus. You know, it's about tone, right? Like, if I say, well, I can't see the fucking draft because they put the monitor over there like a fucking idiot, you know, then obviously that's like a lot different to, and you'll have to tell me, I can't see over the top of the camera. What do you see, Capital? It's about phrasing and you know, mm-hmm. I see some people in esports get a little bit heated sometimes when things aren't right. You know, I won't name names, but I've seen it on broadcasts before where production and talent don't seem in sync. I think it's super important that you are, because it will show in a broadcast. And remember, production are the people who control if you're on camera, control if your mic is hot. You definitely do not want those people not giving a fuck about your career by being an asshole to them. that's just real talk. You want them switched on and doing right by you. So, yeah, it's about synergy. So, you know, I do get involved a lot on broadcasts. One of the reasons I took this job was because I'd have that level of autonomy. E-League were great. They listened to a lot of my suggestions, but it was always very clear to me that, you know, I wasn't what I wanted to do on a show. Like, I wasn't going to be necessarily the person dictating mm-hmm. it, and that's fine. It is a big TV company after all, with people who've worked decades and winning Emmys, and I'm just a guy, but I do fucking know esports.
Yeah, you're a guy who knows what he's doing.
Yeah, so when I came here, it was like they just said, listen, these are your directors, these are your producers. If you need to tell them what to do, you have the autonomy to go and do that. You know, I'm director of talent. I got a lot, you know, basically I am the guy here where I was one of the guys at E-League.
Well, and we saw, there was definitely a lot of things about this show that were unique and new. And I mean, we can talk about those with, you know, having a basketball reporter as a host and having a wrestling boxing style intro. But the thing that really stood out to me that was probably one of the most popular clips of the tournament that was a really good testament to how well everyone kind of gelled was the Zayori mic handoff. The fact that he let the player take it away from him. And then I thought that was funny. I instantly was going to clip it and just like share it with some people. And then the instant replay afterwards was brilliant. And that was the kind of storytelling is the wrong word, but that was the kind of like levity that was absolutely perfect for that event, that we don't see other events take that kind of risk in calling out their own talent sometimes.
Well, we had our shit together by day two. There've been some production issues and a lot of people were scrambling, you know, in terms of like, we built a show where we don't want any static shots. I think Dota 2 does this too much. One, you know, you've got one camera, wide shot, two people on a desk, one camera, tight shot of whoever's talking. And for 15 minutes, you just alternate between them. And we don't want to do that. Every time we put a show together, there's so many like moving parts and different shots and things happening. And I think some people were struggling a little bit with the pace on day one. And we had a couple of tech issues, which then snowballed. But by day two, as you said, you know, we had our shit together. So I saw Zayori doing, which again, anybody studying broadcast journalism, lesson one, never give over the mic. I mean, Jesus Christ, that like you never hand it over. Hold it at all times. It is your lifeline to the production room, to the broadcast. If you give that away, you don't know where it's going to end up or when you're going to get it back. So you can't control time. You can't control what's being said. Really, really bad. So when I saw Zayori do that, I like quickly set the production like, uh-oh, here it is. It's like Cardinal Sim 101. The production guys were laughing in my ear and they said, right, we'll get that immediately. And because we had that synergy there, we were all laughing about it on the desk. And as you said, by the time we came back, the replay was ready to go. And like, we had a bit of fun with Zayori about it. You know, he's a good sport. Again, you have to know your talent. I don't think Zayori has like an ego like that. Anyone who's watched the stuff over at Moonduck knows he's very down to earth and a lot of fun. So, I mean, like we just fucking ran with that and it was really good. And again, you know, I saw somebody try and do it to me when I was doing the handing out the check interview. No. Never. You're never getting it out of my hand, no matter how much you claw at it. So, yeah, I mean, like, there was nice little bits like that. And, I think that you know, we want to have fun. Like, what are we doing? We're talking about video games for a living. There's a time for stuff to be serious, you know, like TI, you know, life-changing, money on the line, incredible stories, people literally, you know, having these unbelievable, like, short paths to pro, like Thompson and things like this. And and all of that needs to be treated seriously. The piece they did on Shiva, who's like a fucking inspiration, you know, to me, should be to everybody. That all of that needs to be handled the right way. But at the end of the day, it's video games for money. If you can't find fucking fun in that somewhere, you're in the wrong business. So that's what WSOE is about. There's a time, you got to know when there's a time for it to be epic and a time for it to be fun.
Yeah. Well, so I want to go back to the talent testimonials a little bit here, and maybe away from the fun question. We gotta ask another one of the expected questions. So I went to Lyrical. I asked him what he thought. He said a bunch of really nice things. We're gonna skip over those because, you know, we already know that he's a nice guy.
He's a sweetheart. Yeah.
But he said he's blunt and pretty free with his opinion, which is part of what makes him an amazing journalist, which I think is something we already knew. And then he quotes another talent. He couldn't remember who said it, but someone else said, "I used to think Richard lashed out on Twitter because he doesn't care, but now I think it's because he cares so much that he has to." And then Lyrical went on to say, "I don't know if that's true. You'd have to be in his head, but he's a deeper person than just spewing hate on Reddit or Twitter. I was super curious to meet him because I know anyone in this industry that if you are abrasive, rude, egotistical, racist, homophobic, or any of the other things he's been accused of over the years, you won't last, but he has. He's still a polarizing enigma, but also one of the most interesting people I've worked with."
Yeah, I mean, we had a long talk about it because, you know, like, yeah, people have leveled those allegations at me. I mean, they're all baseless. But he's right. Like, you know, I think one of the reasons why, you know, I do have a tendency to like pop off on Twitter is, you know, it's hard. It's hard for somebody like me to, like, I'm sure there's people who can laugh off being called a racist. I absolutely cannot, you know. I had a real tough upbringing. You know, I was out there, like, a lot of people who follow my content know this. Like, I was out the house when I was 16 years old, literally on my 16th birthday. Didn't have a great relationship with my mother. My father was in prison. And the person who looked after me and took me into her home was my godmother, who was Indian. And I had to listen to a lot of racial abuse being slung at her because where we lived, there weren't a lot of Indian families. And, you know, there wasn't this, like, diversity that you see now when you live in inner city areas. You know, I'm a teenager, and I'm still living with my godmother, who had to, you know, like, she had a real hard upbringing. She had it real hard as well. And this was the person who, like, looked after me when my own mother didn't want to. So it was like the idea that I would, like, I've got something in me, which means I secretly hate her. And she passed away now as well. That hurts. That stings. I can't, you know.
And that's something, like, you have to speak up against, that you don't want to acknowledge it in any way.
Yeah, I can't let that slide. I can't let that allegation slide. Because, it you know, when you call somebody a racist, what it says to me is it means that secretly you dislike everybody who's not the same skin color as you, regardless of who they are in their life, in your life rather. So I, you know, what does that mean? Like, what when I was living in Atlanta, what, all that was all fake? All my black friends that worked on the show with me, that's all bullshit, is it? Like, I secretly, you know, and it's just like to say that about someone like that, that is, you know, I can't imagine being a worse person than that. So it does hurt, and I've had it a lot because I think people realize it does hurt and they say it. So you get caught in this cycle of, you want to kill it with silence. People tell you don't feed the trolls. That doesn't work anymore on social media, by the way. You know, the idea of not feeding the trolls is one of the most bullshit, blasé statements of all time. They don't just go away because you ignore them. They come back. And come back and come back, and if you block them, they make another account.
And then you get made fun of for blocking them.
Yeah, there's no out for you. Once somebody wants to tunnel in, and just say things about you. And what you quickly realize, and this has happened to me a bunch of times, you know, notably with the Loader thing, the fiction will take hold. Eventually, the fiction will take over. The fiction
Whatever's more exciting. People like more.
Yeah, I don't. I already don't like Richard Lewis. So if I hear the lie that he's a racist, I'll just put that in there. I'll just assimilate that into my dislike of him. So, and you know, me and Lyrical talked about this a lot, and why that particular insult has always really hurt me. And you know, I there's never any evidence either. It's like, at least show me the one thing that makes you think this. But there's never anything to produce. It's just, I don't like this guy. Therefore, he must be all of the bad things I can imagine, you know, and that's what you have to deal with. I mean, you know, I've had all sorts of allegations leveled at me, like real nasty stuff. And yeah, it is hard. And it's made me not put a wall up with fans, but my interactions with the community, like when people say, like, they tweet at me and they want to know things and they want answers. And it's like, guys, like, how, in what world can I open up to you when everything becomes ammunition to be used against me? In what world can I tell you, you know, hey, how I'm feeling today? Or I can't have that relationship with, you know, via social media, because everything gets archived, everything gets taken out of context. The best thing to do is just honestly, unfortunately, I ignore a lot of the compliments. And if someone says something that's false or hurtful, I just clap back at them to hurt them too, right? To show them, okay, you're a guy with 2 followers saying this about me on the internet. Now I'm going to say something about you with all of my followers on the internet. Not nice, is it? And you know, that seems to be the only way that the penny will drop. I get a lot of emails from people who, like, you know, hi Richard, again, Sam reads these, he gets cc'd in on a lot of them, they're all the same. You know, hi Richard, 2 years ago I called you a fucking piece of shit and spread rumors that you were a pedophile. I am really sorry about this. I have done a lot of growing up since then. And it's like, yeah, well, I'm happy for you, I guess, you know, like,
thanks.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
How do you decide what to engage on? There was something you tweeted about where it was a really random Reddit comment, something about like Lauren wearing a Quap cosplay. And I think it was either completely made up or horribly taken out of context. And it was just so bizarre. Yeah. I was like, how did you even find this? And what makes you decide to engage on this? Like, is it
so it was one of the
Lauren? Is it?
Yeah, it was one of the top comments in one of the feedback threads that we had pinned up. And somebody had said that I was sexually harassing Lauren and Moxie. And this is what I mean. I mean, like, this is part of a bigger problem with social media. I've said this a lot. I really think social media is causing people to be, like, you know, ill. Like, I mean, this is a full-blown delusion. This person, if you ask them, absolutely believes that this happened. But there is no substantiating evidence. So so Lauren and me had some like little banter during one of our handovers. She was reading out tweets, and we made a joke on the desk where I said, "Yeah, we've had lots of comments coming in. Like, we'd done an earlier segment where a Twitch chat user asked her for a number, right? In Twitch chat, we brought that up and we had some fun with it, right?" Because we're not going to be like, we're not clutching our pearl. Oh, no. Like, you know, some guy did that. So let's make some fun of it, right? Like, and then she was reading some tweets out. And then I said, also, we've had something come in off Reddit, I think it was, where, you know, that somebody has suggested that you have a Queen of Pain cosplay. You should go Google it, right? Because obviously the joke is that person on Reddit is the person saying the thing. And is being inappropriate.
Yes.
Right? It's not me. Yeah. I'm reading the comment for the purposes of humor on the broadcast. This person represented it that I had said to Lauren, "Ooh, blah, blah, blah. I'd love to see you in a Queen of Pain cosplay." Like I was some fucking basement dwelling pervert. And that isn't what happened at all. And then people were replying it going, yeah, and he's made some creepy comments to Moxie as well. Me and Moxie hadn't even done a segment together. So it's like, you see that, and it's like, well, you know, it's getting upvoted. So what do I do? Like, do I am I supposed to ignore that on Reddit? Where if you talk to people, it's like, oh, Richard's done X, Y, and Z. Richard, you know, chokeslammed a 12-year-old Dota player through a table at DreamHack 2015, Hell in a Cell. You know, like, do I let that one go? And it's like, that really bummed me out, actually. I was having, like, a really good time, and I was really enjoying the event. And, you know, like, I've had a lot of thoughts about whether or not I still want to be a host. Because I don't have the ego. Like, I don't need to sit in that chair to feel good about what I do. I don't need the attention. But I came back for this event. I wanted to do it. And I was just sat there for, like, I know, like 4 or 5 hours after that. Because it's a lie, and it's a horrible lie. And it's like, I'm just thinking, what the fuck am I doing? Like, why am I doing this to myself, you know? So, yeah, like, that shit like that does get to me. There's I am not that person, like, but people come out, you know, and they just throw these outrageous slurs at you, and they get away with it because they're anonymous on the internet, and everybody in that thread sees it, and maybe somebody thinks, like, I'll just repeat that lie, you know, 2 weeks from now, 4 weeks from now, maybe me and Lauren are doing a show, and we put it out, you know, because I want to bring Lauren into esports. I thought she was fucking great. I think she's going to be amazing.
Good energy level.
She's in for the long haul as well. She really liked her first esports event. And then it's like, am I going to have to read that lie again? Probably, right? You know, and then there's going to be all these intimations. And it's not fair on her or her partner. And it just sucks. It just sucks that people have to be like that. And yeah, I don't know what the right answer is. Do I ignore it? I mean, like, somebody tell me what the formula is, because, you know, if I ignore it, it stays there forever, and then more and more people repeat it. If I respond to it, more and more people see it, and then people go, ooh, what are you being defensive about? How do I win? Like, can someone tell me how it works? Because I've never been able to figure this out.
There was, it's one of my favorite quotes. So Blitz at this TI, I believe, was talking about coaching Team Liquid. He said the most important thing he ever learned from Kuroki was, Kuroki said, when, you know, a lot of fans love him, and in Dota fans are very fickle, very few people actually stick with anybody. So when you're good, they love you, and when you're bad, they hate you. And Kuroki said that it feels great when people tell you how great you are and they say nice things and you're doing a great job. But if you let that make you feel good, you are also letting all of the negative people make you feel bad.
Yeah.
And so Kuroki's outlook was, I will never give people that power over me to feel good or bad. Like, all feedback is this, like, nebulous, you know, doesn't really affect. And that's kind of the same as saying ignore the trolls, which is not what I'm saying. But it very, like, zen outlook that I really admired.
Yeah, I've said that publicly. I've said words to that effect publicly. Like, I ignore all the compliments because I have to, because I need them to be as meaningless as the baseless criticism. But the reality is that that's bullshit. You know, I'm still a person. I'm still a human being. I'm saying that because I want it to be true. But I'm as susceptible to the psychological manipulation of feedback, positive and negative, as any other human being on the planet, I think. I think it takes a very special kind of disciplined person to be able to detach themselves from just how feedback operates. You know, you crave compliments when you do it, when you do a job. You want people to say it was good. You want people to say your work was good. And you want people to, you know, maybe give you positive feedback on how you can improve. And when people say you did a bad job, or not even about the job, they use the fact you did something to come out and attack you and spread lies about you. Yeah, that's, like, mega disappointing. I think the hardest thing I've ever had to reconcile, you know, and I'm in a much better place now, but obviously I'm like a lot of people, you know, I've had to deal with depression and I had a lot of junk that I had to unpack, you know, from my upbringing and stuff, and you know, I'm not, I wasn't ready to be plunged into the world of social media and constant scrutiny and constant fucking criticism and lies and bullshit. And a lot of it really did, you know, kind of, it didn't help at all. You know, it was like every, I have been one of the most maligned people. Like, I mean, you know, just, and it's lies, you know, like I remember we had this crazy incident in Counter-Strike where we were doing this event for Take TV, and it was a Counter-Strike event, and it was like the summit. You sit on a couch and you drink beers and you watch the games. And Dennis, who runs it, you know, an old esports legend, Dennis Galen, he basically said, listen, here you go. Like, I want you to drink the beers and have a good time. So we were following our instructions. So immediately we were put into all these weird pairings. And there's a guy called Babam Raheem. He does like children's TV commentary. Mm-hmm. So it's like he makes silly noises and you know, it's not my cup of tea, right? But he was there because he'd done the qualifiers, and we all had to work together. So it was like me, my friend Henry, you know, Raheem. We'd never worked together. I think it was the German guy called Johnny, and there was no chemistry. It was a chemistry vacuum, right? And Raheem wasn't saying anything, and Johnny wasn't saying anything, and me and Henry were talking, and then we didn't want to overstep on them. So I, like, leant over and said, hey, come on, do the Babam stuff. Come on, like, in other words, you know, be yourself, right? Mm-hmm. Do your thing. Do what you're here to do, because he hadn't said anything for, like, 10 minutes. Immediately, there was a Reddit thread made by I don't know who or why or how it could be interpreted this, that I was bullying him. I mean, this guy's the same age as me. I was bullying him for not being able to speak English or something, and I was drunk and out of control. I'd had like three bottles of beer over the course of a day. And yeah, and then this, and it's like, oh, that'll get dismissed. Nah, blew up, front page Reddit thread, people saying I should be fired from the broadcast, people saying I should be not allowed in esports, people saying they were gonna, who lived in Germany, who were saying they were gonna come to the house because they knew where it was and they were gonna stab me. All of this thing that demonstrably didn't happen. Again, it just didn't happen. And why were people so quick to believe it? Why did people get so dramatic about it? Why did people want to fuck me over specifically? Well, you know, it was the same year, I think, that I'd broken the Eye by Power story. I'd made a lot of enemies doing what I do through my journalism. And these people all just gravitate towards this. And yeah, I was like sat in a hotel room like overnight just seeing this thread snowball, people tweeting at me. I'm clapping back on Twitter and I'm thinking, this can't be my life. This can't be how it is, you know? And we went in the next day and the drama was still going on. You know, like the tournament organizer had to address it. It's like, it's a fucking Reddit thread by some guy who made up something he imagined in his brain. And the thread's still there. You can go and look at the comments. I mean, it's just unbelievable. And like I've
and
had
it
this.
It has to become part of the broadcast because it's such a big deal that you have to actively address it as part of the show that it should have nothing to do with.
And it was just literally, this is all lies. And like I've had that happen to me. I don't know, like 4 or 5 times in the past 3 years. And it now I'm just in a place where it's like, do you know what? I'm just gonna be who I want to be. Like when I go to bed at night, I'm not thinking about, you know, Sniper Wolf 420 Elite XXX on Reddit and whether he's going to be a better person or whether what he thinks is the, you know, I gotta live with myself. So I'm just, that's it now. I said it before, the gloves are off. I'll say what the fuck I want, when the fuck I want to. I'm never compromising because you will never win with the crowd. So fuck them.
So that doesn't exist in Dota. We had that a little bit with Too Good. He stood up for talent. He did what he needed to do. And I mean, he got pushed out. He's gone. And I don't blame him for that.
He'll be back. James will be back. I believe it 100%. He loves Dota.
I hope it. He always thought he was one of the best.
Yeah, he'll definitely be back. Once Diabolical gets released, and he's got a little less to focus on because I think they're in the crunch time now. I'm not too sure when it's coming out, but I think it's slated for Q1 next year, but I could be wrong about that, so don't take that as gospel. But James will come back to Dota 2, and you know, I talked to him ahead of the event just to get some ideas and pointers. And, you know, I think it's a shame that James's relationship with Valve irreparably broke down. But I will also say, I know enough about Valve that they're not going to Riot Games him and make it so we can never talk about Dota 2 again. There's no way they would do that. It would be a first. They don't do things that are spiteful or malicious, not in my experience anyway. So there's definitely a road back for James. I think anybody would love to hire James. I would love to have had him at WSOE. In my job, sat, you know, in my chair, because it would have been epic. But I think Toogood will be back in Dota next year, 100%. I got a real good feeling about it.
Well, so Dota doesn't see many, we'll say, outsiders step into our events, right? So this is, as far as the Dota community is concerned, they're going to see you as an outsider, even if you've been playing for a long time. So OJ Borg did some stage hosting with Shiver at one ESL event. Day 9 did the one TI, and he has not made another appearance. Machine pops up every once in a while, and Red Eye is like his own special category. I don't think he really counts because he's just ubiquitous, man. So are you going to be, he did that event one time, or are we going to see more?
I mean, listen, you know, it's hard because I would need to be a host. And obviously, you know, Machine's in that role, Red Eye's in that role. I think tossing my hat in the ring would be kind of a little bit disrespectful to those guys. Second of all, I'm, you know, exclusively contracted to ESP Gaming. I don't think they'd stop me working an event because it'd be good optics for them. But I mean, I guess technically they could. But they've never stopped me doing anything with anybody. So I can't imagine they would start. But I would need to want to do freelancing again, which I'm old, I'm tired. I've got a very full, you know, with doing content with you guys and working at ESP. I'm a columnist for VP Esports. I got a YouTube channel. You know, it's like there's so much stuff I'm trying to stream as well. There's like a lot there. So to be away for a weekend really hurts all of the deliverables I got to do for everybody. Including myself. So it's like, I'd definitely love to do it. But equally as well, I'll just say this. Like, the absence of criticism from the WSOE event, from the community, was the best feedback you can get. Like, in esports, if people don't make a thread saying, this guy's terrible.
Yeah, there was nothing. There was that one quap comment you pointed out. It was like the only negative thing I saw.
Yeah, exactly. So, I guess I'll be, and there was comments as well saying, look, it was 3 years ago, the load of stuff, like, let's just all move on. They seem to have, it was nice to see more people than I expected to be open to the idea of me coming in and doing Dota. Now, whether or not there's room for me at the table, I mean, you've got a million, like, fantastically talented Dota people, I don't know. Whether those people would want me to be at the table, that's another consideration. Yes, I've got my advocates, you know. Moxie's going to advocate for me, Lyrical's going to advocate for me, Cap's going to advocate for me, all these people. Toby, you know, like, all these people are going to come out and say, this guy's great, you should want to work with him. But, you know, there's probably these people that I'm uncertain about whether or not they would want to take that risk. And I don't want them in their day job to feel like, you know, oh, here comes the asshole inserting himself into it. Because again, I don't need the attention. I don't need the money. So, you know, I'm always happy to kind of play nice in that regard. So I know about Dota. I love the game. I am interested in all of the happenings and occurrences. If I ever got evidence of Dota players being ripped off or bad things happening to them, or if they were in an unsafe environment, the same as people from Overwatch come to me, people from PUBG come to me, people from Counter-Strike come to me, people from League of Legends come to me, people from StarCraft come to me, you know, that invitation obviously extends. Like, I will look after your interests. The game you play is fucking irrelevant. But whether or not there's room for me at the table, whether or not I've left it a bit too late, I don't know. I mean, I think it's reasonable to say I'm never going to be at a TI. Then is it also reasonable to say I'll never be at a major, and then would I ever be at a minor? Who knows? So I want to do more in Dota. I want to do stuff with Zayori, but I think I'll be more of a fly by, drop in, fun guest, you know, uncle type rather than somebody that's, like you say, a ubiquitous presence. So. Yeah, provided that works, you know. I mean, like, again, if obviously the community can dictate that one way or the other, I think, because I wish it wasn't true, but Reddit threads unfortunately do matter in our industry. Anyone who says they don't is lying to themselves. So
Reddit threads drive talent decisions on a regular basis.
Yeah,
it's very clear. Not easy to see.
Not mine, and they never and they never will. But then,
to be fair, you did pick a bunch of people who don't have negative Reddit threads. So there
true.
Is that.
I mean, I wouldn't have hesitated. I mean, like again, if I
mean,
think
they don't have negative threads because they're good.
Yeah,
that's why.
If the biggest asshole in any scene, provided that I get good feedback about their green room conduct. And I think they're good for the show, I'll pick them up. Like, I don't give a fuck. Reddit never gonna, you know, social media's never driving my decisions. I am very much the master of my own destiny. You know, it's not even a consideration. It's got to be about the crew, and it's got to be about the end product, the show. Because the show lasts forever. This is the most important thing. It doesn't matter what's going on, you know, periphery to the show. You got to get on air, give the fans what they deserve, and do good work, because the work is there. It lasts forever. We got VODs. You know, people are going to come back and watch it time and time again. You got to make those, like, magic moments, because those get entered into history, and people remember that. So that's all I ever care about, just doing a good show.
And so we'll do last question. Okay. What from WSOE are you the most proud of getting entered into the history of esports?
It's a good question. I mean, a lot of people pretty hyped about Bruce Buffer doing our thing. We technically that wasn't a first, because we'd had him do our PUBG event as well. But you know, obviously, the concept of the World Showdown at esports is something I like. I like the idea that, you know, now Team Serenity have a belt, right, and they've got to defend it. And what I want them to do, and this is where it's difficult. Because in MMA and combat sports, you would call somebody out, right? You would say,
yeah.
I got this belt, come get it. And I am trying to push, like, Team Serenity. Go on, tell me who you want to play. We'll put up a bunch of money. Well, you could defend the belt in Vegas as part of another event, you know? So it might be, for example, you know, let's say we did decide we wanted to do a fun community event, like a Midas mode thing. And then the main event is Team Serenity. You know, they want to defend their belt against, you know, Team Liquid or, you know, OG, whoever they call out, right? You know, but in Dota, we're all a little bit afraid of call out culture, I think.
Well, on top of that, Team Serenity isn't. I interviewed one of them at TI, and you know, talked to a couple of the players via translator, and they are not. They did not give me the call out persona. There are some. Chinese players, like when I spoke to Shadow, who was on Wings, you know, he was giving so much sass to all the Western players and just being like, it's because you guys are bad. That's why you can't play these heroes. And, you know, there's some players who will do it. And the Serenity guys just did not feel like they're the ones to call anyone out.
Yeah.
We need PPD's team to win. And then
So what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to reverse engineer it so I can get a team to call them out. And come and do it that way. So, I mean, basically, like, I think when people get the format and what we're trying to do, I think it'll be a tournament organizer that is, like, you know, beloved by all the communities that we get involved with, because we are trying to make the fights, the matches, fans want to see for high stakes. Have them happening regularly, have them happening in Vegas, you know, trying to just give it a little bit of edge, a little bit different. You know, I'm tired of esports trying to, I don't know, like, again, it's like you've got to know when to be serious and know when to not be. And I'm so tired of esports thinking it's got to play it straight all the time. We are the mainstream now. What we do, people copy us. People copy us in esports. Television copies us now. So if we don't want to wear suits, don't wear fucking suits. I feel like a fucking idiot done up like a fucking penguin with a shirt and a tie, and oh yeah, it's stupid. What are we doing that for? That isn't even representative of our demographic. Now again, yes, dress up to the nines for the TI. You know, mm-hmm. God, I miss Bruno, by the way. Holy shit, do I, speaking of suits, do I miss that motherfucker? But you know, like, sure, do it for TI, but for an event like WSOE, do we all need to be all stuffy and ties? And no, fuck that. No ties. Let's have fun. Let's do this. Let's do, you know, like,
although
it's just
Moxie in the like full on sparkles was true Vegas. I appreciate that.
I will say she put us all to shame with her impeccable wardrobe and just air of glamour. But yeah, you know, it's like we when it's a title match, we'll be super serious and in your face with it. When it's something else, we won't be. We'll have some fun. And, you know, and I think if the Dota 2 community can get on board with what we're trying to do, I think it'll add something a little bit different. You know, we want to do more events. That's not a secret. We definitely are not just doing one event for the sake of it. There will be more Dota content from us. And other games as well. But yeah, I think the most successful element has to be, I mean, because obviously we got an amazing final, but mm-hmm. the event as a concept is something that we do not have anywhere else in esports right now. And if the Dota teams can get on board and start fucking with each other and calling each other out, big money matches, I think it just gives us like an extra edge. You know, we all love the majors. We all love TI. Of course we do. It's the best tournaments out there with the best format, probably in all of esports. But nobody is like saying, let's have a high stakes, you know, best of three, best of five, you know, maybe a stipulation match, you know, like mm-hmm. we want to walk that fine line of making matches that people want to watch and the fans get excited about and maybe doing it a little bit differently. I might have a no Phoenix rule. Who knows? But you know what I mean. But let's do stuff like that for the fans. Yeah. So I think that's going to be the thing that stands out. Hopefully,
it's hopefully pioneering a new style of esports event.
And of course, if it doesn't work out like that, it's all my fault, and we'll get a Reddit thread about it. So you know.
So either way, it'll be remembered, and you succeeded at something.
Indeed. finally.
Well, I think that's all I've got for now. I'm sure, you know, round two, I could come up with a bunch more, but.
Yeah. I like the touch of going out and getting testimonials about me, which was nice. Just as well, that didn't backfire, of course. Oh, well, look, it was great to get acquainted with you and great to have you on the show. And thank you very much for researching all of that and asking me questions so I can talk about my shit. Really appreciate it, Renessa. I'm sure when Sam edits this together, your social's going to be
below. Sorry,
below,
on there, man. Sorry.
Yeah, it's already on there. he's good, isn't he? But is there any,
covered.
But is there anything you'd like to plug in case people want to see more of your stuff here?
I mean, I should probably plug Rivalry.
Absolutely.
Would be my guess, yeah. So let me just think. Okay. So thank you for sitting and talking with us. At Rivalry, we're really interested in, well, one, building rivalries. So this whole pioneering a new esports event kind of, you know, goes well,
everyone's
into what
doing
we
it.
Do. Yeah. But we really want to give fans a reason to be invested and tell people's stories. And so it's nice that we got to tell Richard Lewis's story here for a change, as you normally tell other people's stories. So thank you for that.
And of course, if you like the content and you want to support the channel, you go to rivalry.gg/RLS, where you will qualify for up to $350 worth of VIP bonuses. Crucially, it shows, though, that I am worth sponsoring. It means Sam gets his salary and doesn't have to live in squalor and starving to death anymore. So no pressure, but if you don't go to that link, you will be killing Sam. So anyway, I think that's it, Sam. We'll wrap it up there. Thanks a lot for watching, and I'll see you next time.